Hello, this is Daniel Gregory, and thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Perceptive Photographer Podcast. This is our 301st episode, so I really do appreciate you tuning in. No matter what platform you're on, or if you're thinking about switching podcast platforms, we're on all the major platforms, so a rating or review up there would be great. Really do appreciate you listening and subscribing. It means the world to me that you are actually out there listening. I wanted to talk this week about something that it's probably come up a few times in the past, but I wanted to kind of rebundle it and reapproach this concept because I think it's foundational to how we appreciate and understand photographs. And by that, what I mean is we're going to talk about how do we appreciate and understand photographs. And rather than me telling you about what I think you should look at as a photograph, how you should appreciate the photograph, this week I want to talk about how you construct your framework for looking at photographs, what kind of things you need to consider for you to actually put into application this process. So I hope that by the end of the podcast, you're thinking about your methodology for how you're going to approach creating the system by which you're going to judge and view and critique, evaluate, appreciate photographs that you look at and see, whether they be your own or somebody else's. One of the most important things I think when we look at photographs is that we have a bias into our photography. That bias is who we are. It's who we are as a person. It's the things we think about, the things we look at, how we appreciate life in general impacts the way we look at photographs. There are certain things you maybe like or don't like in photography. Maybe you don't like square photographs. Maybe you don't like rectangle photographs. Maybe you only like color. Maybe you don't like black and white. Maybe you like photographs with puppies, but you don't like photographs with kittens. All these little biases that you have on how you look at, evaluate, and judge photographs. None of that really matters except that you identify what those biases are. Your innate way of being. So you've got to dig deep here a little bit. You've got to think about when you look at a photograph and you have a visceral reaction to that photograph, positive or negative, what is it about that photograph? Is it the subject matter, or is it the editing? Is it the crop? What is it that makes you have that reaction? And then we need to document that. We need to write that down. We need to have that out of our head. Because when it's in our head, we can rationalize things, we can ignore things, we can make up statements that prove whether or not what we think is true or not true. But when we start to write things down, we start to get a sense of what comes up over and over again. What words do we see repeat? What concepts do we see repeat? Those become the lattice that we actually can start to hang our own awareness of photography on. As we look at those words, as we create those words, as we create that lattice, we can then apply that to our process. How do we go about doing that? Well, let's start with our own photographs, our own photography, and then we can do the same process with somebody else's photography. The work is going to be the same, but I would suggest you don't commingle your photographs with somebody else's photographs as you do the work, because there will be subtle differences you're going to see in your work that you won't necessarily see in somebody else's work and vice versa. But what you want to do is start with, say, a group of images that you've imported. Go through your culling process again. Even if you've edited them, put numbers on them, stars on them, colors on them, whatever. Just go through a chunk of photographs and look at how you cull those images. But here's the rub. Here's the challenge. Here's the heavy lifting you're going to have to do. For every image, you're going to say out loud to yourself the reason that you're making the culling decision to include it or not include it. So if you say to yourself, oh, the horizon line's crooked. Oh, it's out of focus. Oh, I don't like puppies. Oh, I forgot that I needed to use a different shutter speed. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever you normally do to cull out photographs, you normally do that very, very fast. What I'm asking you to do is actually slow down. And for every photograph in that bundle, just write down if it makes the cut or doesn't make the cut, but the reason it makes the cut and the reason it doesn't make the cut. Because one of the things that's odd about this process is you might reject images because you're like, well, the horizon line's not straight. But yet in a different photograph, the horizon line might not be straight, but you decide that you're going to straighten it in post-production. So why is it that one that's got a straight horizon line and one that doesn't, why does one make the cut or not the other? You're going to start to see that it's not necessarily your initial knee-jerk reaction to the photograph that's the issue. You're going to start to pull back some of these layers on the onion to understand the complexity by which you're looking at some of these photographs. That's what we're starting to look for in this framework. Can you identify and name what are these core elements when you look at the photograph? go through your culling process and do that. Once you've done the culling process, go through your sequencing process or your selection process, whatever you call the next step of what you're going to edit. How do you then choose of the 100 photographs you culled down to 20 interesting photographs? How do you then decide what to edit next? What are the actual decisions you make in that process? How do you think about going about that editing process? Oh, I'm going to start with this photograph because it's the most difficult. Well, what makes it the most difficult? Does it have the most post-production work? Does it have the most narrative elements that you have to tell and you're not sure what story you want to tell? Whatever the approach is, it doesn't matter, but you've got to write down and name that. So you've got now a sheet or sheets of paper that have 100 images and descriptions. Now you have 20, and then eventually you'll get down on the editing and then the final selection, what makes the final image work or not work. So each time you're just identifying keywords and key elements within this concept. Then do that same thing with somebody else's work. Grab a photo book, go to their website, look at images, and same process. Now here, the assumption is they've already been culled. They've already been selected. They've already been edited. So we're looking now at final work, but that same methodology, when you look at the photograph, what do you react to? What do you initially react to? Would you include that? Would you not include that? All of those terminology words you're coming up with, all those identifiers of your bias for likes and dislikes, we're starting to pull together. So once we have that language, you identified that language, you've done the heavy work. What you want to start to do then is put those into similar buckets. If you're looking at things that are aspect ratio slash crop slash rule of thirds, golden ratio related. So that whole bucket of kind of the crop and all of the framing rules, maybe that's one bucket. Color might be another bucket. Subject matter might be another bucket. The subject might be another bucket. But what are these kind of big buckets where you can throw the bigger the bucket, the more you can put in a single bucket, the better. So I wouldn't make a bucket, like I said, if we stay with that cropping, I wouldn't do a bucket for cropping and a bucket for rule of thirds. Rule of thirds is in the cropping framing decision. So framing would be my bucket, and in there would live cropping and subject placement and all of those different elements. Identify what those key buckets are. Then once you have that process done, start to stack rank in what those various elements are. What matters most to you? What do you respond to first? What do you respond to the least? What do you respond to initially, but it's not that big a deal? Like, you're like, oh, I'm kind of bothered by, you know, muted colors, but I'm really bothered by a crooked horizon line. What are those things that drive that behavior you have as your reaction to the photograph? Once you understand those high-level buckets and the things that are in there are ranked or not ranked, go grab another set of images. And now, when you look at a photograph, identify what are the key buckets that you're reacting to. What within the bucket are you reacting to? So if you're reacting to, like I said, maybe it's an image and you're reacting to the aspect ratio of 1:1 versus 16:9. And you say, I just really don't respond well to 16:9 as an aspect ratio. I prefer things to either be 3:2 or 1:1 or 4:5. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You just know what the reaction is. Once you start to identify those elements, as you start to cull through the photographs, notice where you oftentimes sort of put your initial foot forward. And then is that in fact causing you to inadvertently make a decision about the photograph based on one particular aspect of your criteria, your lattice framework for how you describe photographs? Does it create a framework in there that is making you miss something of interest in the photograph? Is it allowing you to not understand something in the photograph because you're responding to not the photograph, but an element within the photograph? The reason this exercise works is because we're forcing you to slow down to look at the photographs. Rather than have the initial knee-jerk reaction to look at the photograph, we're now imposing a artificial constraint that says, how do we respond to the photograph? What do we see in the photograph that makes us respond that way? And when that happens, we end up with a much more well-rounded understanding of the photograph as a whole, rather than the reaction to the thing we don't like. There are a lot of photographs that have elements that I don't appreciate or like within the photograph as a single point of contention. But the totality of the photograph actually is visually interesting. I also notice in my own process, in my own work, that I will sometimes lean into that single point of pressure, that single point of annoyance within the photograph as the critical judgment, and therefore miss the whole. So whether you see the forest for the trees or the tree for the forest, or what is that psychology by which you bring to the image? So by going through this process of writing things down, building those buckets, we are again putting an artificial constraint to help us better understand what makes a good photograph for me or for you. The other reason that's so important is that when we then talk about photographs, we then have the big buckets by which we can describe what we like or don't like about the photographs, as well as the subtext underneath that. So what I can say is I'm having an issue with the framing of the photograph, because that's a high-level bucket for me. So when I tell you I don't like the photograph and its framing and this context within the framing of how the aspect ratio is laid out and then how the placement within the frame is off of some ratio magic value that I've decided I don't like, when we end up in that state, we have a much more effective conversation because we are now talking about very specific aspects of the image that we respond to rather than generic things outside of the image. So I would encourage you to try that for homework. Just grab a couple hundred images and grab a photo book off your shelf. Just go through that process and see what you get. I think as you start working forward in your photography, you might find your ability to hit and edit, cull, select, judge for print will all be that much more effective because you're going to have a deeper insight into why you're reacting to the photographs you like or don't like. Thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode. I hope the exercise proves useful if you try it out, or at least gave you some insight into maybe how to think about and approach your work. But again, this is one of those weeks where a little bit of work on your part, I think, will be hugely beneficial in how you approach and think about your photography moving forward and the photography of others. Stay safe out there. Don't forget to wear your mask and take care of your family, your friends, and loved ones. And I will see you next time.